number two on this Friday. It's Bickley and Murata coming to you live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. For the second time in three games, the Arizona Cardinals will face off with the San Francisco 49ers. They took the first matchup in Glendale, rematch in Santa Clara on Sunday. Here to talk about it from a 49ers perspective, he covers the 49ers for NBC Sports Bay Area and KNBR Radio in San Francisco. Matt Maiocco, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Matt, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
No problem at all. Yeah, it's like I think we've been down this road before. October 31st and just the quick turnaround. Seems like the 49ers and Cardinals always have these little spans of two games in 3 weeks, but everybody is trying to figure out new stuff that they didn't find out the first time to apply it into Sunday's game.
Yeah, we'll get into that. Normally, we'd just dive right in with the 49ers questions, but considering what transpired last night in Cleveland at the end of that game, we got to get your thoughts on this, Matt. You've been covering the NFL for a long time. You ever seen anything, a player lose his mind like that on the field?
No. I mean, I've seen varying degrees of it, but not to that extent where, you know, the helmet was in his hand for what seemed like a long time, and then you could kind of see the light bulb go on and go, you know what, I'll just hit him with it. It's going to be fascinating to see what comes out of this, because, I mean, there's already talk of, you know, some sort of, was it criminal behavior, mm-hmm. you know, that it wasn't a football play. You know, it goes beyond what's supposed to happen from snap to whistle. So, I'm sure everybody will appeal the suspensions. You know, everybody who is suspended will appeal it. Whether the arbiter keeps those suspensions intact, I mean, this is a story that will continue to be talked about and discussed and probably litigated for quite some time.
All right, Matt, let me ask you about this. The big story for at least, I think, the foundation of this game between the 49ers and the Cardinals is generally going to be, what is the health of the 49ers, particularly on offense? How is the roster shaping up? Who looks to you to be definitely out? How big of a role are injuries going to play in this game?
Oh, I think injuries will play a very big role. And I think George Kittle is definitely out. I would think that Matt Breida probably won't play either. Joe Staley is definitely out. And then Emmanuel Sanders is kind of iffy. I think he's going to play. He has basically some fractured rib cartilage from the game Monday night. And when I talked to him yesterday, he was still mighty sore, but he at least went through a walkthrough, which to me is a sign that, you know, if they didn't anticipate him playing, there's no reason for him to be out there and go through a walkthrough. He hasn't practiced yet, but, you know, the 49ers are going to have to figure out, you know, how that offense is going to look without George Kittle. And we saw it Monday night, and it didn't look great at all. He is such an important guy. And, I mean, you saw it in that Thursday night game in Glendale where, you know, the team was kind of sputtering.
Yeah.
And even though he was injured, he's the guy who makes the play, you know, kind of tossing Buda Baker around a little bit on that touchdown. And so he has this knack for not only coming up with a big play, but also providing a spark for his team, something that was severely lacking on the offensive side of the ball Monday night.
Speaking with Matt Maiocco of NBC Sports Bay Area, KNBR, here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Jimmy Garoppolo, obviously, he wins a lot. We know that. I think 16-3 now as an NFL starter. Statistically, he hasn't been great. He looked phenomenal in the game here in Arizona 2 weeks ago. He didn't get a lot of help Monday night with a lot of drop passes. But overall, how would you assess the play so far of Jimmy Garoppolo this season?
I'd say somewhere between what he showed against Arizona and what he showed against Seattle. And I think that's kind of what you're going to get with a guy, you know, who's basically only made it through one full season just combined. You know, mm-hmm. in, 6 years in the NFL, he's basically started the equivalent of one full season. So probably him more than, you know, the established guys, you really look at him and view him through the lens of what did he do in the last game. And so, you know, for 10 days or so, it was, you know, future Pro Bowl quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo. And then after Monday, it was, you know, bust Jimmy Garoppolo. So I think he's doing a good job. I don't think he's been great. I certainly don't think he's been awful. But as you alluded to, I mean, he just got no help from his supporting cast. And some of his passes that were classified as drops, you know, were certainly not perfect throws.
Yeah.
But catchable, and some of them were perfect throws, and the pass protection wasn't great. So I think he's doing a good job. I think he's shown that if he needs to throw for 300 yards like he did against the Cardinals, he can do that. But it's a matter of the consistency too, because you know he only threw the one interception against Seattle, and that went through a receiver's hands. But he put the ball up several times in positions where the Seahawks had a better chance to catch it than the 49ers. So he's got to clean that up. He's got to be more consistent. But if you judge a guy on the bottom line, I mean, you alluded to the 49ers record or even the Patriots record when he was a quarterback, he generally, and by and large, does what's needed to win football games.
All right, Matt, let me ask you about the 49er defense, because when these two teams played in Glendale, the Cardinals, they did fairly well offensively, scored 25 points. After the game, Richard Sherman and others said their focus wasn't quite right, and you could get it on a short week, the game before the Seahawks game. Do you buy that? Do you buy that the Cardinals are going to be facing a different defense this time around just because of the focus they did or didn't show in Glendale?
Yeah, I don't know about the focus. I mean, I guess that makes sense. But that was probably the game this season where the 49ers defense looked the most vulnerable. So they fully go into this knowing what to expect, because all they have to do is turn on the film from October 30th first and realize that the Cardinals had success in certain areas, and that's what they're going to be seeing. I mean, the Cardinals did a really good job of getting the run game going early and then using screens and quick hitting passes to kind of take the air out of the 49ers pass rush. So the 49ers did not defend the screen game very well. They know they're going to see a lot more of that. I think they'll be better prepared for that. And then when they do that, now it's up to Cliff Kingsbury to come up with something off of those plays. And, you know, if the 49ers are cheating more toward the screen, then what does that open up for the Cardinals offense? So the Cardinals enter this game, I think, in a pretty good situation where, you know, they know what the 49ers are thinking they're going to see. They know how the 49ers are going to probably approach them to take away certain things. Now, you know, where do the vulnerabilities lie in the 49ers defense? So as I see it right now, the Cardinals are kind of one step ahead offensively, ahead of the 49ers defense, but the 49ers defense, I think, is a more talented group, and they've played really good football through most of the season, that game in Glendale kind of being the exception.
Now, one of the things the Cardinals have had a lot of success at Levi Stadium. One of the things that they've not had to deal with is a rocking stadium in Santa Clara. That has finally changed this year. Tell me about the vibe at 49ers games and how there finally is a home field advantage for the 49ers.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, the 49ers always felt they had a home field advantage at Candlestick, and that just didn't carry over to Levi Stadium. Now, obviously, a lot of that had to do with the team not being very good. I think also what you find is when generally, and I saw it in Dallas, when a team moves into a new stadium and the prices go through the roof, a lot of season ticket holders can make up some of that money that they've plunked down by selling their tickets. And typically the people who sell tickets, or I should say who buy tickets on the secondhand market, are people coming in for the games and generally people rooting for the other team. So the first time I heard that Levi Stadium, that the atmosphere in there was great, and what a, you know, what a venue it is for football was actually during the national championship game. That was just in January when Alabama played Clemson. And I wasn't at the game, but talking to people who were there, they said that that place was electric. Mm-hmm. And they thought, you know, they, if they can ever turn this thing around, this place can be a good atmosphere. And we certainly saw it Monday night. I mean, the place was pretty electric. I don't expect that on Sunday, because it's a day game, you know, the fan base isn't as vocally, you know, hateful of the Cardinals like they are of the Seattle Seahawks. So I don't think the atmosphere will be anywhere near what it was Sunday, Monday. But it still should be a 49ers home field advantage just because of the enthusiasm now the fan base has for this year's team.
Matt Maiocco of NBC Sports Bay Area and KNBR, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sportsline as we talk Cardinals, 49ers. Like I said on the way into this interview, Matt, you've been covering this team for a long time. You've seen a lot of really good football teams. You've seen Super Bowl teams. And I know there's a lot of football left to be played. From what you've witnessed, what you've felt from this team this year, does this seem like a Super Bowl capable team in your mind?
Yeah, it does. And I mean, I'm certainly not predicting them to get to the Super Bowl, because I think that there are probably at least four, maybe even five or six teams in the NFC at this point that I just would not be surprised if they get there. It's all about how you enter the playoffs, you know, how the injuries kind of stack up for all those teams. But no, I think that they do have enough options on offense when everybody's healthy, that they can run the ball, they can convert third downs, and defensively, it's definitely a Super Bowl, you know, a team worthy of being in that Super Bowl conversation. So, you know, are they a perfect team? No, of course not. You know, are they a really good team? I do believe that, yes. But I really think when you look at the NFC, I think the AFC is pretty clear cut with one team above everybody else, and then another couple teams in the picture, maybe just one other team in the picture. But I think it's going to be a battle in the NFC to simply get into the playoffs. And then I don't think there will be an easy road for any team. Even the team with the number one seed, I would not be surprised if they lose in the division round. So I think it's wide open, and I think the 49ers are right there.
All right, finally, as a guy who once covered Colin Kaepernick, what do you make of what's going on this weekend outside Atlanta?
You throw that one at the end. It's surprising to me that this is happening, because any team that, you know, wanted him, and we're talking about a player who hasn't practiced or played since the 2016 season, it's not like he just became a free agent and teams are lining up to talk to him and sign him. And we're talking about something that's going to happen in mid-November. And I mean, is he really an option for a team to sign for the stretch run? I don't get it, other than the potential that maybe some teams are interested in bringing him to, you know, their off-season program, but don't want to make a circus out of it by having him come to their facility, working him out, and now the world knows, you know, this particular team is interested in him, and they didn't sign him. So what does that say? So I guess if there are a couple teams out there that are legitimately interested, then the other teams that show up are kind of doing them a favor by being in that same voice. They're in that same mix. So
yeah.
I just see that. I mean, I just don't know what to make of it, because there's clearly a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes that we just aren't privy to.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what shakes out. Matt, thanks so much for the time and the insight. I always appreciate it.
Okay, my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Matt Maiocco covers the 49ers for NBC Sports Bay Area and KNBR Radio. He joined us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter, your family-owned dealership for Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti. Reminder, you want to be listening today and every day next week, 7:30, 12:30, 4:30, for your name and the chance to win an Amazon Echo and get qualified to spin the Wheel of Sports trip. Each qualifier will have a whopping 44% chance to win one of 12 amazing sports getaways, including Cardinals at Seahawks on December 22nd, Suns at the Lakers in L.A. on New Year's Day, ASU hoops in Vegas at the Pac-12 tournament, or D-backs in Chicago to take on the Cubs next April. Text SPIN to 620-620 right now. That's SPIN to 620-620. And then listen, it's the Arizona Sports Wheel of Sports Trips.
Miles Garrett, the main instigator of this whole situation, has been suspended indefinitely and basically will not be allowed to play again this season. Even if the Cleveland Browns go to the postseason, Miles Garrett no longer will be a part of it for his role in last night's melee in Cleveland. His season is finished. It is over.
That's Adam Schefter of ESPN breaking the news earlier today. This happened right before we went on the air at 10 o'clock. Miles Garrett, and in case you missed it, just a wild ending to the game last night on Thursday Night Football. Browns beat the Steelers 21-7. That's almost a footnote at this point.
I know.
Even though it was a huge win for the Browns. But Miles Garrett gets tangled up with Pittsburgh quarterback Mason Rudolph. They exchange pleasantries. Rudolph's helmet gets torn off his head, and in the scrum, Miles Garrett, in frustration, swings and connects with the head of Mason Rudolph with his own helmet. Just a total melee, one of the worst on-field incidents we've seen in quite some time in professional sports. And now Miles Garrett pays the price of missing the rest of the season for a team that looks, dare I say, at least in the win-loss column, resurgent, Vic.
Oh, yeah, no, this is a big, big loss for them. It was a story that is speaking to pretty much everybody because it speaks to a lot of things. It speaks to that one game every year where professional football, you realize just how dangerous these guys can be. And where, you know what I mean? Every year there's that one game where there's just lawlessness, where there's anarchy, whether it's Courtland Finnegan and Andre Johnson. You remember that?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that was insane.
Standing in the middle of the field trading punches.
Oh, Josh Norman and Odell Beckham Jr.
Yes.
That fight. There have been incidents like this. The thing that set this one apart to me was just Miles Garrett taking off the helmet and then deciding, as Matt Maiocca said,
I'm going to hit him.
I can hit him with this. Right? Now, I'm telling you, Mason Rudolph was an instigator in this. Now, I'm not trying to sound like Max Kellerman here. He did help trigger some of this because he was trying in the moment to get that helmet off Miles Garrett first. He took exception to a hit from Miles Garrett that he didn't think was necessary, and it probably wasn't. It speaks to the lack of control on the Browns. It speaks to Miles Garrett becoming the next Vontaze Burfict. It speaks to this rivalry. Do you know these two teams play each other again in about 2 weeks? Really?
Yeah.
Really? And that game's in Pittsburgh?
Well, to me, it's obviously ultimately a reflection on Miles Garrett.
Ultimately,
just horrible. And I saw reports today, and I think it was on maybe from the Dan Patrick show, that Joe Thomas, the former Browns offensive lineman, had said Miles Garrett just felt absolutely awful about it. And he's very distraught. He's willing to accept the penalty. Still, it doesn't erase what he did. Can you imagine, though, Bick, how much worse this could have been if not for the presence of David DeCastro?
Oh, that's a good point.
If David DeCastro is not in between those two and Miles Garrett gets a cleaner shot swinging a helmet at Mason Rudolph, we might be talking about a catastrophic injury or worse.
Yeah, you're right.
That's how irresponsible the act from Miles Garrett was.
Yeah, no, that's a good way of putting it. That's you're right. That's the kind of the proper context it needs. It's gotten to the point where people have wondered, Will Mason Rudolph consider legal action? As of this morning, Mason Rudolph's agent said they're considering everything.
Yeah. Booger McFarland, who does the color commentary on Monday Night Football, he was on ESPN, and he said just that.
If I'm anybody in the Pittsburgh organization, the Rooney family, I'm not leaving Cleveland until we file charges. I don't care whether it's misdemeanor, whatever it is. I'm filing charges because the intent of Myles Garrett when he took the helmet and he used it as a weapon was to hurt Mason Rudolph. And to me, that's when you cross the line from the sport that I love, from the sport that I played for 9 years to be a competitor, to you cross the line to doing something else. He violated the code, man. You ask anybody. That's why all the former players are up in arms, because we don't do that. We protect each other. We pray for each other when the game is over, because we are husbands, we are sons. We have to go back to our families. And you took the helmet and you tried to hurt this man. I don't care what he did. I don't care what he said. I don't care what happened between the play. We as football players, we as a part of the 1,600 players in that fraternity every year, we don't do that.
I know there's people listening that are shaking their head at the notion of pursuing legal action against Myles Garrett. But let me put it to you this way.
Yeah.
And we can use the way the NFL has ruled and the way their stance has changed on off-the-field incidents. Let's just say, hypothetically, Myles Garrett's involved in a situation off the field, and he gets into a scrum with a guy riding a motorcycle who's wearing a helmet. And during the course of the altercation, Myles Garrett takes the helmet off and swings it at the motorcycle rider and makes contact.
Mm-hmm.
The NFL gets video of that. Myles Garrett is likely never playing in the league again.
Yeah, you're right.
Guess what? The league has video of Myles Garrett doing that to a fellow football player on the field.
Yeah.
So that's why that's not that notion of pursuing legal action is not ridiculous to me.
He
could have killed him.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. I read something from somebody who claimed that in a sport like football, where violence is institutionalized, it'd be hard to get a conviction for somebody doing what he did. But at the same point in time, what you just said is 100% accurate. It's really, it's on one level, it's the NFL's worst nightmare, because everything that they're trying to build the new referendum and the new football around is being your brother's keeper, not subjecting fellow competitors to any extraneous harm when the game harms you enough. And Myles Garrett violated that. Mason Rudolph, coming out of concussion protocol, had a horrible concussion a couple weeks ago. You throw all that together, and it's a nightmare for the league. I'm curious to see where they're going to go with it. And you're right, to leave the suspension open-ended is a very interesting statement from the NFL.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything that bad happen on a football field since Billy Cole of the L.A. Stallions scored a touchdown and then pulled out
a gun. What movie was that?
The Last Boy Scout.
Okay.
Good movie. Ever see it?
No.
Bruce Willis.
Good movie?
I love that movie.
Jared, are you saying
it good?
It was
No, it's not horrible.
Okay. Not a good movie.
He pulled out a gun and did what?
It's good cheesy entertainment.
He shot himself on the field.
Really?
Yeah.
During a play on the game.
Yes.
In the rain.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of
played in the dark because apparently the stadium lights.
Kind of hard to play football with a gun. Where do you have his gun stashed?
Yeah, his pants. Where else do you keep your gun during a football game? Come on,
wow.
Big. Put that on your list of movies you need to watch.
I know that Hollywood makes you suspend disbelief. That's that's really a lot of suspension happening there.
That might not even be the craziest thing that happened in a football game in that movie.
Yeah.
That's a tease. You should watch it.
Okay.
All right, coming up, Colin Kaepernick will be on a football field with NFL personnel around this weekend. Will he be back in the league? And what's the Cardinals' interest? We'll cover all that next. It's Bickley and Murata live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Of course, Colin Kaepernick is in the news. Are we actually going to see Colin Kaepernick and his workout on Saturday?
Yes, we will have a representative at that workout. No, you know, guys, we're focused on San Francisco, and you know, as you guys know, we do somewhere between 100 and 120 workouts a year for UFAs, probably somewhere in the range of 800 to 900 for college football players. So this is nothing new. It's all part of the information gathering process. And, you know, that area has got a lot of college football games going on. So we'll have a representative in that area who will attend.
Steve Keim with Doug and Wolf this morning, obviously saying that the Cardinals will have a representative at the Colin Kaepernick workout. The follow-up question was, will you be there yourself? Steve Keim didn't sound all that comfortable answering that question.
No, he didn't. He really didn't.
Which to me, and Steve Keim's not the only executive slash coach in the league that has been a little bit sheepish answering questions about Colin Kaepernick this week. If you're sheepish answering questions, then maybe you probably don't want to go down the road of attending the workout, even if it's due diligence. If the guy is divisive enough, or in some people's eyes, toxic enough to make you uncomfortable asking a question on a sports radio show, maybe you shouldn't be there.
Well, and that's a...
Am I wrong there?
No, you're not wrong there. And this to me is kind of a weird piece and part of this story. Okay, whether or not you agree with what Colin Kaepernick did, and once again, to repeat my stance, I respect his ability to do what he did because there was no rules against it. I, as a commissioner of the NFL, would not like it. I don't like players using their workplace, when their workplace is not of their making, to do things that actually hurt the brand. And I also believe that it's I would not blame, even though I think Colin Kaepernick has been blackballed unfairly, I would not blame any owner for not signing him now, because he has become such a political, toxic, hot potato that whatever team brings him in is going to deal with angry fans. I wish the latter weren't true. I wish people weren't so emotional about this guy. I wish people cared as much about the domestic violence offenders and the felons in the National Football League as much as they do somebody who disrespected the national anthem. Okay, but I heard Gambo talk about this yesterday, and he in no uncertain terms said he wouldn't feel comfortable with Colin Kaepernick as part of this community. That to me, this is taking the hatred to Colin Kaepernick to a crazy level, in my opinion. Because even if you don't agree with Colin Kaepernick, he was taking a stand for a very serious issue, and that is the perception of police brutality in impoverished, largely African American communities, which is a very real issue to them. And if you don't know anything about that, then you've put it this way, you've got to know something about that to fully understand what Colin Kaepernick's trying to do here. Okay. But the problem is Colin Kaepernick's actions have been so widely misconstrued as disrespecting the military. There's a comedian who does this great bit that you see Colin Kaepernick take a knee, and it's like, hey, my brother fought in Iraq. How could you do that? And that's not what's happening. That's never been what is happening here. But because the American flag and the NFL have become so intertwined, because the glorification of the military has become so part of the NFL experience, this stuff is kind of, this is what the atmosphere is like in the NFL. I don't like Colin Kaepernick. I don't like some of the things he stands for. But if we're really going to champion that flag, then that flag is supposed to mean a lot of things. And that means tolerance to people who think in ways that we don't. And that, to me, is pretty basic about being an American. Now, when it comes to this, but the truth of the matter is, no matter what I say or what I think about Colin Kaepernick, it's not going to change the minds of people who do not like him, because this has become a political issue. And we know in our country now, there is no ambiguity in stories like this. There's black or white.
No, and generally, I, speaking only for myself, I don't like when politics and sports intersect. I never have. I never will. To me, sports is an escape, and when the vitriolic world of politics bleeds into my escape, it makes me uncomfortable.
Yep,
I get it. Matt Maiocco brought up some great points, and so many of the questions are about the timing of this. The last time Colin Kaepernick took a snap in an NFL game, it was January 1st, 2017. That was the last day of the regular season of the 2016 campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So 2017, 2018, and now half of 2019 have expired. Why now an expedited workout when he couldn't pick the date, that the NFL is not being completely cooperative with Colin Kaepernick's people in all of this.
Yeah. Because
that, you know, going into week 11 in November, there's reports out there that Jay-Z, you know, the rapper, influenced Roger Goodell and was really the one that got this pushed through. Jay-Z's been supportive of Colin Kaepernick in this quest for the last 3 years. Okay, fine. Is this just to appease Jay-Z and for the NFL to check boxes and say, oh, we gave him a chance. Nobody wanted him. Let's move on. None of this really makes much sense to me at all.
Except this is what makes sense to me. It makes sense that if Jay-Z was pushing as part of this social active NFL of the future, then he might be pushing, please give this guy a workout. The NFL might say, yes, that's fine, let's do this. But if you're the NFL, the last thing you want to look like to your customers who are on the other side is that you're really going overboard to indulge Colin Kaepernick. So if you do it kind of begrudgingly like this, you're not going to lose the hardcore fan who doesn't want any part of this to begin with. You talk about how Steve Keim is treading very carefully around this issue. I saw a link to a story that claimed some Cardinal fans were threatening to stop being fans if the team went through with going into this workout. It turns out there were two people. So it's not exactly like it's a movement.
Well, on that social media thread.
Okay.
Yeah. Or in the article that was featured.
But there are fans who are disappointed that the Cardinals are doing this. And you're right. If you really cared about Colin Kaepernick, then bring him in yourself. Bring him in on a Tuesday. The Cardinals right now have got enough backup quarterback. I like Brett Hundley just fine. They don't need Colin Kaepernick. Last year at this time, I'd have said, yeah, they do. But I don't think there's a need for him now. I think he's good enough to be in the NFL. But the fact that teams have to go to this thing to create numbers so that few teams that might actually be interested won't be singled out and thereby targeted by their fans, that's sad. It's sad this thing has gotten this political.
I'm really curious to see what shakes out. I mean, what if he excels in this workout? And, you know, people that are attending it let the information out that he excelled, and then he's still not in the league.
Yeah.
There's 32 NFL teams, and you're telling me not one team has been interested in the services of a guy who has, at one point in his career was labeled as going to be the best quarterback that ever lived by Ron Jaworski.
I think the Cardinals are taking one for the team by going to this workout. I think they have no intention of signing him. I don't think they are even entertaining the idea. I think they're doing a solid for the faction in the NFL that wants this to come off. Now, we'll see if it even does come off.
Yeah.
Maybe the NFL is trying to put so many restrictions on it that Colin Kaepernick says, oh, this is stupid.
Yeah.
Forget this.
Yeah, I'm done. Yeah. We shall see. It should be an interesting workout in Atlanta over the weekend. Coming up next, big brawl in Cleveland. We'll get the viewpoint of a former player, Rudy Carpenter, will join us next to give his thoughts. It's Spickley and Marotta live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
There's no correlation between this song and our next guest, is there? Where we're going with...
I don't think so.
Here it is. Well, he tackled Rudolph. Rudolph didn't like the way that he was tackled.
Oh, my goodness. Rips the helmet off Rudolph's head and then eventually swings it and hits him in the head. And then Ogunjobi comes up and hits Rudolph from behind.
Beyond words, Joe.
Gosh, that's one of the worst things I've ever seen on a professional sports field.
That was the reaction watching the replay last night at the tail end of the Cleveland-Pittsburgh game. Joe Buck, Troy Aikman on Fox here to join us now. Comment on what went down in Cleveland last night. He was sitting in the co-host chair last Friday. He's in the on the guest line on the Coulter Automotive Group sports line this week. Rudy Carpenter, our guest. Rudy, how are you, man?
Oh, I'm doing really good. Thanks for having me on. I'm at Disneyland right now with my daughter.
Oh,
get out of here. Really?
Wow.
Oh, yeah. We're doing it, man.
Mention Dan Bickley's name. You'll get pushed up in line. You'll get all kinds of perks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for that.
Yeah, no worries, man. Well, thank you for carving out a couple of minutes before you go on Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, bro. All right, listen, we got to get your thoughts on what went down last night. I know sometimes you think out the box. That's why we love you, Rudy. What'd you think of what went down?
I mean, look, obviously, I don't think that this is what the NFL wants their product to be. I think that what Myles Garrett did, was wrong. And I think he deserves a suspension. But I guess my argument is more so reactionary to what the Twitter sphere says, what the TV folks are saying. And I guess my opinion is I just have a really hard time with the wanting to cancel people and wanting to ban people and wanting to fire people. I think I disagree with you guys on the Vontaze Burfict situation as well. And that is what it is. But I just think that this is an incredibly egregious situation for Myles Garrett. It's like I said, it's bad for the NFL. We can go on and on and on. But again, my problem with this is the amount of people who are calling for Myles Garrett to be banned from the NFL.
Well, I see that point, Rudy, and I hadn't really thought of the cancel culture when it comes to that, and there are people calling for it. But when Bick and I were talking about this earlier, if not for the presence of David DeCastro, we might be talking about a catastrophic injury suffered on the field on live television or worse. And it's hard to argue that there was not intent there to injure from Myles Garrett. And I think that's why people are reacting as harshly as they are, those people that are calling for a permanent ban from Myles Garrett. Your thoughts on that?
Come on, man. I mean, number one, I watched this exact incident happen in a practice in Tampa Bay that nobody ever heard of. And the dude got 40 staples in his face. Really? I mean, nobody ever talked about it. I mean, I can go on and on and on.
Let's talk about it. Who was it?
No. Nobody talks about, the fighting in hockey like this. That's a part of their game. It's a part that many fans go to the game to watch is the fighting. We see many times people throwing 105-mile-an-hour baseballs at people that could injure you on every single play. I mean, when you look at the numbers of the MMA and the numbers of boxing, they're wild when it comes to pay-per-view. And again, I think multiple things can be true at once, and I think that's what gets lost in a lot of these conversations. And what gets lost is, you can say that what Myles Garrett did was wrong, but people are probably applauding, Pouncey getting suspended too, and the NFL has to suspend him. Can you imagine Pouncey's in the worst situation ever? If he doesn't suspend Mason Rudolph, if he doesn't suspend or doesn't fight Mason Rudolph, his entire team will lose respect of him.
Yeah.
If he does fight him, he gets suspended 3 games and loses a bunch of money. A matter of fact, more money in those 3 games than all of us make combined in a year. And so this is a heavy penalty, but it's like we're just okay with these things because, well, they're rich athletes. All I'm saying is this, multiple things can be true. Myles Garrett can be wrong. Pouncey can be wrong. The kid coming in from behind and hitting Mason Rudolph can be wrong. Look, let's not also forget that Mason Rudolph was playing horribly.
Yes.
Mason Rudolph was playing terribly. 4 interceptions at that point. He wanted nothing but the game to be over. That dude is pissed off and angry. He hasn't playing well, and he did a lot to instigate this. I'm not saying
that
he deserves what happened to him. What I am trying to say is two things. You're talking about football players, you're talking about athletics in general, and when you're talking about those things, you're talking about adrenaline. You're talking about a feeling that you can't get anywhere else. That's what people chase regularly. And there are things that happen in the midst of a quick emotional spurt or it's a reaction that happens quickly. You're talking about a guy like Myles Garrett who's been applauded and he's been awarded and he was the number one pick because he's been violent, he's been barbaric, he's been vicious in how he plays the football game. He takes it a little bit too far, and now all of a sudden we just want him to be disappeared from life. Lastly, I'm just saying this, okay? All of us are thankful that we currently aren't what we were at 23 years old. And let's not forget, Myles Garrett is 23 years old.
All right. What do you make on this weird, hastily arranged, begrudging workout awarded to Colin Kaepernick over the weekend?
Well, I think it's a lot of things. I think one of the reasons why Colin Kaepernick can't get a job is because of the media attention. Every time Colin, if he would get a workout on a Tuesday like every NFL team does, that would be national news. It'd be on ProFootballTalk.com, and Mike Florio, who is like the Don Juan of Colin Kaepernick talking points, would have this blasted all over his website. And the teams don't want to deal with this. They don't want to bring in a guy where he's a backup quarterback and the locker room is flooding of media people trying to get a story. It's not what these teams want to deal with. So personally, I think this is some weird arrangement, some weird backdoor settlement that the NFL has with Colin Kaepernick to get him a workout, have teams come. I talked to a team this morning who is going to that workout, and they're like, yeah, we're sending a low-level scout there, but for no other reason than we feel like we have to. I mean, this whole thing is just is totally egregious to me. It's weird.
Yeah, couldn't agree more with you on that, Rudy. Appreciate, like Bick said, appreciate you carving out some time for us, especially when you're at the happiest place on earth.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm sitting in this restaurant where, like, you know, they got Goofy and the Chipmunks and everybody, and I'm over here trying to talk about Miles Garrett.
It's the happiest place on earth, man. They're like, what's that dude with all that intensity in the corner?
Seriously, I'm in the corner.
All right, Rudy. Thanks, Rudy. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon. Rudy Carpenter joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter, your family-owned dealership for Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti. You're a little bit jealous he's at Disneyland, aren't you?
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
I can tell. Uh-huh. A little bit wistful over there.
I am. Yeah, you can see it. You're kind of losing me here a little bit. I am. I'm like,
I wish I was there.
Mm-hmm.
Having breakfast with the characters.
Mm-hmm.
All right, coming up, the Bickley Blast is straight ahead. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.